At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. Hope things are well with you wherever you are today. I hope it's a payday for you. It is the third. Yeah, and it's Friday. So maybe for you weekly and bi-weekly wage earners, today is the day. And you get some money, pay the rent, pay the mortgage, pay the bills. Many of you are already beginning to file for your taxes as well. So good luck with all of that. Hope that you've been responsible in that regard. A lot to talk about today. Got a great top 10 list for you. We're going to look at the bowl season, kind of how things stand right now for the Southeastern Conference. Not much football left, as you guys are well aware. But how have we done as a league? I joked earlier today over on the jeanspage.com message boards that you know, the SEC had won an Eiffel championship since State's bowl streak ended. Yeah, the SEC needs us. Yeah, they need us to be good in order for the league to be good. I digress. But nevertheless, we're going to do some hot takes again, too, as we kind of project what 2025 could look like for Mississippi State. As you guys are well aware, we're going to have you know, preseason baseball practice starting, I think it's the 24th. It's 3 weeks before the beginning of the season, so I think it's 24th. But baseball season in many respects is pretty much here. We're going to get together on Monday and begin to have our preseason, you know, workouts with our finalized roster in advance of the first official day of practice coming here in about 3 weeks. Yeah, so 6 weeks away from college baseball season at Duty Noble Field. And a lot out there to talk about, for sure. Of course, Mississippi State women drop a game last night to Kentucky. We'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll preview Saturday's game against South Carolina. And I'll give you my hot takes on both of those programs before we get out of here today. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company. You should as well. Chances are you already do. You probably have a raving love affair with Bulldog Burger Company. As well, you should. Great place to do business, man. Put your feet under their table and let them take care of everything else. Great food, great pricing, integrity in pricing. That matters to me. It does. As hard as I work, you know, I want to get what I'm paying for. A lot of people out there still kind of doing the post-COVID thing, charging you that convenience fee. And they say, well, you know, we don't want to raise our prices, so we're just going to slip in an extra fee in here on you. You know, then they expect you to tip on top of that, you know. Those are the things that kind of get under my craw a little bit. That's why I respect the folks at Bulldog Burger Company. Even though the world changed here about 5 years ago, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't lose sight of who they are and who they're serving. That's one of the reasons they're still growing strong today. Bulldog Burger Company with 3 great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. In addition to that, find a great restaurant-quality hamburger that suits you. Find your own favorites. Kind of got a hankering again for the smokehouse. Maybe we'll shake it up and get the mission. I get the pico de gallo on the side. You know, I'm not an onions guy. Maybe you are. That's up to you. But get that chocolate shake to go. Ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. There's some people out there kind of beating up the SEC right now. And some of that's warranted. You know, we have not done extremely well in the FBS playoff, and a lot of people are upset about the draw. And listen, they're going to figure this thing out. But a lot of people are like, hey, you know, they should have reseeded all this. I agree. I don't think the conference champions should just get a pass or get a bye. I think you should take, hey, we'll take those top 12 teams. Maybe we expand to 16. I don't know. But the reality of it is they've got to tweak it a little bit, because you've got some second round matchups that are probably maybe a little bit unsettled, if that makes sense. But I thought the Texas-Arizona State game was absolutely outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. But let's take a quick look here and really how everybody has done in bowl season. The Independents are 3-0. Of course, Notre Dame, a big part of that, because they've played two, quote, bowl games. UConn wins over North Carolina of the ACC, that is really struggling this year. UConn 27-14 winners over the Tar Heels. And then Notre Dame beats Indiana, first round playoff game, and then beat Georgia yesterday. And I kind of maybe deluded myself to thinking, hey, you know what, Georgia, even with Gunnar Stockton at quarterback, should probably win this game. And I remember thinking, you know, when we left Athens, Georgia, those of us that actually went and covered the game, I began to think, I don't know if this Georgia team is capable of winning a national championship. You know, you like the running game, you like the defense. Wasn't so sure about Carson Beck and that offense. Just didn't think, hey, you know what, I don't know if they can really press you down the field the way they normally have. And now Carson Beck gets injured, doesn't get to play in the playoff, and now expected to go pro. But Notre Dame wins the game, and honestly, I think after watching that yesterday, Notre Dame was the better team. True story. So 3-0 for the Independents, even though technically Notre Dame kind of considered a Big Ten school. All right, the Pac-12, or the Pac-2 as we call them these days, that conference is expanding. Officially, just one bowl appearance, and Washington State got absolutely skull-drugged by Syracuse. Again, ACC not doing very well, but that's a win for them. Speaking of the Atlantic Coast Conference, and we talk about separation in college football. You know, we've had all this discussion about the SEC and the Big Ten, kind of getting together and talking about some scheduling models that make sense for the two of them. The ACC just kind of seems to be a conference that's just kind of there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and we talk about how great Power Four is, but isn't it really a Power Two right now? I mean, the Big 12 has got some good teams, but I don't know how many elite teams they have now that Texas and Oklahoma have left, even though Oklahoma didn't do well this year. But the ACC now 2-10 in the bowl season, 2-10. And it's not like they played head-to-head with a bunch of world beaters. Pretty crazy. Their two wins, of course, Syracuse beats Washington State to death. Louisville slips by Washington 35-34. That's their two wins. And you look at the playoffs, SMU and Clemson. And that's one of the reasons that people want this thing reseeded. Neither of those teams were great playoff teams. And the results showed that. Penn State, 38-10 winners over SMU. And Texas, of course, 38-24 winners over Clemson. But honestly, if you watch that game, did it ever look like Texas was in trouble? I don't think so. And I think this conference realignment has really hurt the ACC. I think NIL and revenue sharing will continue to hurt the ACC. I think that's one of the things you got to consider, too. And you begin to think about, again, this whole Big Ten-SEC prospective partnership could really elevate everybody involved in that because of the revenue that it's available, which, of course, is passed along to the student-athletes nowadays, too. And so if you can make more money and play in more important ball games in the Big Ten or the SEC, I think you're going to do that rather than go to the ACC. Just my feeling. Maybe you see it differently. All right, the Mountain West is 1-4. Ashton Jeanty, the number two Heisman vote getter. A lot of people are really, really critical of that. They feel like he should have won the Heisman. I think you could make a case either way. I voted Travis Hunter number one, Jeanty number two, Dylan Sampson from Tennessee number three. Call me an SEC homer. I just felt like the SEC leading rusher deserved to get some accolades. I was probably one of only a handful of people that voted for him, but I did. And some would say, Steve, you should have voted for Cam Ward. Well, maybe so. Well, maybe one day you'll have a Heisman vote and you can do that. The one win for the Mountain West came from UNLV and Barry Odom. He was a finalist for the Mississippi State job. Leaves there, now Dan Mullen's there. Congratulations to Dan, everybody involved there. But the Running Rebels beat Cal 24-13. In the playoffs, of course, Boise State 31-14, and it just really felt like Ginty, in some respects, kind of got exposed there. But the Big Ten is still a rock'em sock'em league, right? I mean, they still will beat you up at the line of scrimmage, and you got to think a program like Boise just not going to have the depth in the trenches to compete with an upper level Big Ten team, and it really showed on that day. Conference USA, our friends there, 1-3. In bowl season. The win, Sam Houston State takes down Georgia Southern 31-26. Yeah. That's it. That's all you can feel good about, you know, if you're Conference USA. And those are the things you think about too. You know, with so many of those teams bolting for the Sun Belt, you know, what's the quality of that league moving forward? You know, revenue sharing is going to be a big issue for them too. All right, we mentioned the Big 12, you know, still considered part of the Power Four. And it's so interesting, too, to see how that league has changed. You know, now you've got some Pac-12 teams that have joined. You know, the Pac-12 team is just, you know, the Pac-2 or whatever they're going to call it these days. It's just not the same. Arizona State, we went out to Tempe, Arizona. We felt like those guys were a good team. We didn't think they were a great team. Turns out they were a great team. And Kenny Dillingham did a great job without any question. Easily the coach of the year in the Big 12. And Kansas State, one of the four bowl winners, 44-41 winners over Rutgers. The New Mexico Bowl, TCU, takes care of the Raging Cajuns from Louisiana, 34-3. In the Pop-Tarts Bowl, that was a very entertaining game for those of you that watched it. Iowa State, 42-41 winners over Miami. And there are a lot of people at Miami that are like, you know, early in the year, like, hey, this is going to be our year. You know, we beat Florida. We kind of run through this thing. We got a great chance in the ACC to do some major things. Didn't work out for them. Iowa State, remember when Matt Campbell was like the talk of college football? It was like he's stuck there now. I wonder what the rub is there. But you win the Pop-Tarts Bowl, maybe one of the more entertaining games of bowl season. The Alamo Bowl, 36-14 as you had two conference opponents play. Interesting, right? But and you look at this whole Colorado thing too. A lot of people like, and that's, again, it's the whole waiting for the hero to fall, right? There are so many people out there that just have a negative opinion of Deion Sanders, and he's earned some of that. But when you look at kind of what they've done, you know, in this year, now granted, a lot of talent leaving that team. You got to wonder what Deion's going to do, you know, long term there. But you know, we went out and hired two coaches off his staff, and maybe that's a harbinger of things to come for the Buffaloes. But 36-14 win. You watch that game too; it just felt like BYU was in a different league. It's just, even they're from the same conference. That's just how it felt. In the college football playoff, of course, Texas 39-31 winners over Arizona State. And about this Peach Bowl game, guys, when it's, you know, a tip to the kids out there, when it's fourth down and you're a safety, you can't get beat over the top. That just can't happen. If they catch you underneath you and they run for a first down, that's something you kind of got to live with. You cannot get beat over the top. Arizona State had every opportunity to win this game. If you have a safety there that makes a very fundamental play there, the game is over, and we're talking about Arizona State moving on to the semifinals. But pretty incredible game there. And it's so funny, too. It's like when Texas kind of figured out that safety was a little bit slow to the spot, you know, they come back and they run that wheel route basically with a tight end there in the same safety, doesn't get over. So good play calling and good schematic work by Sarkisian and the staff there is they eliminate the Sun Devils. And again, what can you say about the great job that Kenny Dillingham has done? You know, again, we went out there, we felt, you know what, hey, this team is probably better than we expected. And some would argue we should have won the game. I won't make that argument because I really felt like they beat us up. And I remember when Scatabo kind of got off on us and didn't have the next couple of weeks, people were like, you know, it's just, you know, it's more a reflection of who we are. I think it was both. I don't think we were great against the run, and I think the numbers certainly show that we were putrid against the run. But also, too, that Scatabo is legit, and ends up finishing sixth in the Heisman voting. So there's something to be said for that. It'll be a much different-looking Arizona State team when they come to Starkville next year. Now, I think if there's any question about that, you know, you go sign as many guys as they did, things are going to change. All right, the Sun Belt Conference, 3-3. Probably a big year for them. South Alabama, the Jags, even without Fluff Bothwell, they take care of Western Michigan, 30-23. The Broncos, you know, we played them last year. We're kind of a solid MAC team, but they weren't great last year. If you remember, we ended up losing Woody Marks and Will Rogers in that game. James Madison takes care of Western Kentucky, 27-17. It's interesting to watch JMU. You know, even you know, with the coaching change there, the Duke's still doing some good things there. They are. Western Kentucky. Of course, Drew Hollingshead has left Bowling Green and headed to Coastal Carolina. Had traded some texts with Drew after he got the job. Congratulate him on the move. Drew's a great guy. And eager to see what he does, you know, with the rest of his career. But again, moving on from the hilltop to the beach, Arkansas State in the 68 Ventures Bowl takes care of Bowling Green, 38-31. That's probably a game that you missed. I did. I didn't watch it. But yeah, it's so interesting too. And so many of these. You know, Sun Belt teams, you know, you're basically playing a lot of your peers. You're not going to play a lot of Power 5 or Power 4 teams. All right, SEC currently with an 8-6 record. Not great. Not great. But maybe not as bad as some people have suggested. Now, you look at the wins here. Florida absolutely did Tulane. And it's like the Gasparilla Bowl was played so long ago, you almost forget how well Florida played in this game. And granted, Tulane had some guys opt out. But it's a good Tulane team. You know, John Sumrall, a guy too that was rumored to be the front runner for the North Carolina job, turns it down, stays at Tulane. They make a bigger commitment. And I still think that Sumrall is holding out for the Kentucky job. And maybe that job's available next year. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So Summerall, I think, is playing the long game here and not just looking for the quick reward. So probably the leading candidate for the Kentucky job should it come available in December of 2025. The Birmingham Bowl, Clark Lee and Vanderbilt. And again, Barton Simmons, I texted him shortly after that game was over and said, man, what a hell of a year for you guys. Happy for my friend. And Vanderbilt, of course, kind of changing some things out there, right? You know, Diego and those guys, of course, you know, leading the charge in that NCAA lawsuit. But Vandy beats Georgia Tech 35-27. I picked the Commodores to win this game because I just felt like they would rally around Diego. Number one, he's very, very good. But it's like, hey, this isn't the last game of an era. This is like, you know, the first game of next year. And Georgia Tech, you know, hey, great job by Coach Key and those guys this year, too. Remember, early in the year, they were just beating people up. We just didn't realize how bad the ACC was. The AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Arkansas, 39-26 winners. We entered the year, including myself, thinking, hey, you know what? Sam Pittman's probably got the hottest seat in the conference. Not only did he post a winning season, they win the bowl game. They have some juice going into the offseason. Of course, the portal has been difficult, but they still found a way. You know, put up 39 points. You know, the Texas Tech team, of course, doing a great job in the portal right now. A lot of it's, you know, quantity over quality, but, it's hard. At the end of the day, it's a lot of new players. They needed them in Memphis. Music City Bowl, Missouri beats Iowa. And it's been a great run for Brady Cook. I mean, I don't know that he gets enough respect within our league. I guess put together a really, really solid run. I think Eli Drinkwitz has his guy, but it's going to be interesting to see what this Tiger team looks like next year. And you kind of felt like this would be a lower scoring game. You know, Iowa's always a team that just kind of makes you play their game. They're not going to win a shootout. And Missouri capable of doing that. Texas ball, I was a little surprised with this one, considering all of the upheaval at LSU. But they destroyed Baylor 44-31. That game was essentially over in the second quarter. Sawyer Robertson did some good things in that game late, but of course the game had been decided. Sawyer's a great guy. Wishing the best. Really do. Last night, of course, Ole Miss 52-20 winners over Duke. If you pick Duke, you're just asking for trouble. I mean, they're playing a third-team quarterback. And I give Jackson Dart a lot of credit. You know, I know a lot of Mississippi State fans are ready to see him go. I'm among them. I've been impressed with the guy for 3 years. Really glad to see him go. It's been a great era in Ole Miss football, and I think Jackson Dart is a huge reason why. I mean, you take Quinshon Judkins out of the team, they still win 10 games. They had Judkins this year. A healthy Judkins, they're probably in a playoff. I think you could make that argument. But I thought all the crying on Twitter from Lane Kiffin was a little bit beneath what we would expect from an SEC head coach. And they said, hey, we want to go out here and make a statement. You don't make statements in the Gator Bowl. It's not how it works. You know, nothing against the Gator Bowl. We've had some good experiences out there, but nobody's paying attention. And it's pretty clear that the Ole Miss fans paid attention from home last night. If you watched that game on TV, it was like, as one of the guys in my group text said, it was like, a basketball game in the Mississippi Coliseum. You know, there wasn't many people there. But they give Ole Miss credit. They took care of business. Back-to-back, 10 or more wins. Seasons for Lane Kiffin. Historic for them in many respects. All right, looking at the playoffs for the SEC. Of course, Texas takes care of Clemson. Ohio State drilled Tennessee, and I felt like Ohio State had the athletes in the secondary to match up with Tennessee, even at full strength. And then you have six receivers from Tennessee go in the portal. Yeah, it's a tough thing. You know, it truly is. I don't care how well you recruit. When you're in the playoff playing against an elite team like Ohio State, you need to have your first team offense out there. Tennessee didn't. And Ohio State did pretty much whatever they wanted to do in this game. But I think beginning of the year, I told you guys I thought Tennessee was a dark horse to kind of sneak into the playoff because I didn't think they would have to play in the SEC championship game. Turns out they didn't. But they went as far as I think they could go. And I think even at full strength, Ohio State probably – I mean, if Tennessee's at full strength, Ohio State probably wins this game. The margin's probably different. But I think Tennessee got as much out of the season as they could. I know many of their fans are like, you know, when will we be elite again? I think you are elite right now. And I think you also probably need to go back and look at where you were 2 years ago. And look at what you were facing when Jeremy Pruitt was fired and how your administration was able to navigate through that. And you get Josh Heupel, which so few people were excited about. And Heupel has done a good job. You know, the first year of the expanded playoffs, and Tennessee is mentioned. And I get it. You know, Tennessee is like, yeah, but look at what Alabama's done. Look at what Georgia's done. I don't know that that's going to happen for Tennessee anytime soon, but I think you got to be happy with where you are. They're not, but they should be. We'll trade with them. Quarterfinal matchup, of course, Texas beats Arizona State. Notre Dame beats Georgia. And so you got one game left, and that's Texas in the national semifinal. Right? And I know you guys are excited about that. I mean, the SEC's last hope is Texas versus Ohio State a week from today. It's going to be a 6:30 kick. Ohio State and Texas. It's going to be awfully interesting. Just looking at it from first blush, man, I may have to take Ohio State. Maybe. We'll see how that looks as we get a little bit closer. All right, the Big Ten, everybody's talking about them, 8-5. So essentially the same record. They just had one less team make it. But 8-5. So again, as we began the segment, the Big Ten and the SEC just kind of running the show right now. The Las Vegas Bowl, USC, former Pac-12 team, has a resounding comeback to knock off A&M. And you talk about an unhappy fan base. It's A&M. I mean, you go out and you get Mike Elko, of course, that was an incredibly poor coaching search that ended with a great result. Mike Elko, of course, was one of the primary candidates mentioned as soon as that job came open. And then they have to kind of circle back to him and write a bigger check, but they get him. And I think a lot of people in A&M, it's more Texas envy than it is actual A&M angst, right? It's like, hey, we want to be Texas. Well, you're not Texas, and you're just consistently going to kind of be an 8-4 team, especially in this league. You know, maybe the Big 12 will take you guys back, take that reduction in revenue, but I think A&M got it. At the beginning of the year, we thought, I'm not exactly sure how good A&M is going to be. They had an opportunity at one point to win the SEC and couldn't finish. I think a lot of that is a reflection of quarterback play. But USC comes back, wins that game 35-31. The Pinstripe Bowl, Nebraska 20-15 winners over Boston College. Maybe one that kind of slid off your radar a little bit, but Nebraska, you're kind of riding the ship a little bit there. Not that we expect them to return to the Tom Osborne glory, but Nebraska certainly a much better season than they've had in recent years. The ReliaQuest Bowl, as you guys know, Michigan takes down Alabama 19-13, which has a lot of people wondering, you know, how's this thing going to work out for Kalen DeBoer? Well, let me tell you, this is kind of pretty much what I expect. You know, a team that wins 9 or 10 games just because of the fact that you're Alabama and you've got a great recruiting footprint. You're always going to be able to go out there and get elite athletes. But you can't lose to Michigan. And this is a Michigan team that isn't great. They kind of figured some things out late. It's not a great Michigan team. And so there's a lot of people, a lot of gumps, as they say, that are really upset about the projected trajectory of this Alabama program. And I thought Brandon Walker made a great point. It's interesting to see how Alabama and Georgia have kind of come back to the pack a little bit now that everybody can pay players. True. Of course, Washington beat Louisville. We discussed that one. A little bit of controversy here for some people that we know. Illinois beat South Carolina 21-17. Shane Beamer is a very fiery guy, in case you didn't know. He was when he was here. He wasn't as an assistant coach. And he certainly is a head coach. And I think Shane answered a lot of his critics this year. And I think, hey, you got a new AD in there now. You needed to win. You didn't need to make, you know, the very first thing on his, you know, on his agenda to fire a coach and have to go conduct a head coaching search. But, yeah, Illinois wins that game 21-17. And, you know, Bielema and Beamer had to be restrained. Well, I guess Shane had to be restrained. I think Bielem was happy to kind of walk back to his side of the field, but kind of taunted each other. And it's interesting, you know, the coaches act that way. They're human. But, you know, give Illinois some credit. They win the Florida Citrus Bowl 21-17. Looking at the playoff results, of course, Notre Dame takes care of Indiana. Penn State takes care of SMU. Ohio State takes care of Tennessee. Penn State takes care of Boise. And then Ohio State, 41-21 winners over Oregon. Of course, they're from the same conference. But was it just me, or did Ohio State look, from the beginning of that ball game until the very end, like they were 10 times better? That's how it looked to me. I don't think the score is truly indicative of the separation between those. And there were so many Oregon fans like, hey, things are going to be different this go around. And Dylan Gabriel had a great year at Oregon. But, you know, I remember, you know, a little over 12 and a half months ago, you know, there was a lot of chatter that Dylan Gabriel may be joining Jeff Lebby at Mississippi State. I think he made the best decision for himself, put himself in a great situation to get drafted. I don't know where they're going to mock him up, but they lost to a better team in the Rose Bowl. Absolutely no question about it. So, yeah, you give Big Ten a little bit of a nod there just because of the fact that you got two Big Ten teams in the Final Four. Ohio State takes on Texas, and Penn State will face Notre Dame. And again, Notre Dame, you know, a team that a lot of people kind of consider a Big Ten team, even though at times they play in the ACC schedule in other sports. But the reality of this thing is this year's Final Four is going to have a much more northern flavor. And speaking of that, the MAC 4-2. I know so many of you love Maction, the Tuesday night football on ESPN. It's one of the best things about having cable, right? or streaming services, whatever you call it these days. I'm dating myself. But Ohio takes care of Jacksonville State, 30-27. Of course, State's in the mix with the player Jacksonville State. Northern Illinois, 28-20 winners over Fresno State. State's got two signees from that Northern Illinois defense. And as I mentioned earlier in the week, Northern Illinois went to South Bend and beat Notre Dame. You are not going to be able to compete with Notre Dame unless you've got some dudes on defense, unless you have some dudes up front. Of course, State's went out and signed a couple of those guys. That Northern Illinois defense was legit, as Fresno State, the Bulldogs, found out. In the Potato Bowl, the Huskies 28-20 winners over the Bulldogs. The Game Above Sports Bowl, many of you watched that. Toledo and Pittsburgh in a wild one. And Toledo wins 48-46. And again, I saw some people like, well, I feel better about our loss because they won their bowl game. I don't. I don't care if Toledo goes undefeated, wins the MAC, and wins their bowl game. We should never lose to them. And listen, give Tucker Gleason and those guys a lot of credit for playing well. And they came to Starkville, and they did us in. And that's more an indictment on us than it is on them. It is what it is. We put it in the rearview mirror. In the Arizona Bowl, Miami of Ohio, team that we played in recent years, they knocked down Colorado State 43-17. Yeah, so good bowl season for the MAC, 4-2. And I'm sure at the beginning of the year, if you had told them, hey, you guys are going to go 4-2, they'd be like, hey, we take it. And then closing it out here, the AAC quietly putting together a really good bowl season. And, of course, none of those teams are in the playoff. And they're always going to be in lower to mid-tier type bowl games. 6-1. Yeah, so you could make the argument, yeah, they're having as good a bowl season as anybody. They're just not playing for the things that are quite as substantial. So Memphis, 42-37 winners over West Virginia. You know, so that's a G5 team beating a Power 4 team. And look at what Silverman and those guys have done there, you know. And the Myrtle Beach Bowl, Texas San Antonio, 44-15 winners over Coastal Carolina. Of course, stayed in the mix with the Roadrunner corner, Denver Harris, and of course have signed Will Whitson, the defensive lineman there. You know, they certainly missed him in the ballgame. The Hawaii Bowl, South Florida, takes care of San Jose State, 41-39. I didn't watch that one either. I did watch this one. Navy, 21-20 winners over Oklahoma. And, of course, Oklahoma's had, I think, a half dozen or more wide receivers hit the portal. A lot of those people, are just like, it's a different offense. Jackson Arnold's leaving. A lot of the skill position players are leaving. And you got to wonder, you know, we talked about Sam Pittman last year. You got to wonder if Venables is kind of taking the Sam Pittman role for next year, right? Is Venables safe? I think not. Military Bowl, East Carolina takes down NC State. So, again, here you have a G5 team, the Pirates knocking off the Wolfpack. And you got to begin to wonder, too, like in Raleigh, you know, are they content with the direction of that program? I don't know. Independence Bowl, Army, of course, 27-6 winners over Louisiana Tech. And so, really, really, really good run for the AAC. So, that's your bowl recap. And, of course, there's not much left for us to play. It'll be an interesting week this week. And it's good for us, too, because we get into SEC play and men's and women's basketball. You know, and so that's something, you know, you start looking at that. Meaningful games on the court. But real quickly here, let's take a look back, you know, kind of where things are within our conference. Texas 13-2 overall, and in a position to win an AFL championship. And you know, again, the Sark, you're our only hope for the league. You know, from a financial standpoint, Mississippi State, we'd like Texas to make the NAFL championship game. We don't really care who would win at that point, but we'd love for them to make it because it'd get a little more of a payout. But yeah, everybody else is done playing football. It's basketball season everywhere else in the conference. Georgia finishes the year 11-3. Tennessee 10-3. And again, I think if you're Tennessee, considering where you've been and what the expectations were, nobody projected Tennessee to win the SEC this year except for a few people, you know, in Knoxville. I think you got to be happy with where you are. I know you're not, but you should be. Not to mention you finished ahead of Alabama. They finished 9-4. Beginning of the year, I think we predicted them to be a 10-2 team. They ended up 9-3 and then lose the bowl game. It's going to be an interesting offseason in Tuscaloosa. LSU 9-4, and you begin to wonder, too, with Brian Kelly, are they going to be able to get it done? Now, they finished the year on a three-game winning streak, but they really weren't a factor in the month of November. You know, they get the big win over Arkansas at the time, and it seemed like a really big deal. And it's like, hey, LSU has a chance to control their own destiny. It didn't work out. Ole Miss, you start running the numbers here, and he's like, hey, Ole Miss had a great year. They went 10-3. They did. And, finished behind LSU because they lose to LSU. But, 10-win seasons are kind of a rarity for Mississippi schools. And so are they at the end of a talent cycle? I think so, but I don't think Lane Kiffin's going anywhere. Missouri 10-3, and that's the thing you look at too, is like Missouri and Ole Miss basically end on equal footing. And Missouri actually wins their last three ball games. Ole Miss wins their last two. They beat us and, of course, win their ball game last night. Would you say, Mr. Ole Miss fan, that you're a better program than Missouri? Based on the expectations for this team this year, if you found out that you ended up tied with Missouri, would you consider this your success? I'd say probably not. But to win 10 games in this state is still a big deal. South Carolina, of course, I thought that Shane Beamer, again, kind of quieted his critics a little bit. 9-4 on the year. And, you know, in that second tier discussion about that final playoff spot, I didn't think South Carolina had much of an argument. But the fact that South Carolina was even in the paper as a potential playoff team late in the year, I think gives Shane plenty of ammunition as they kind of move forward. A&M 8-5, lost three in a row. Again, this is a team that controlled their own destiny to win the league and get into the college football playoff, and things just kind of fell apart. 8-5. So an 8-4 regular season, which is typically what A&M does in good years, you know, outside of the 2020 year. Just, you know, that's just kind of who they are. Florida, they were thrilled to go 7-5 and then win their bowl game. They've won four in a row. Florida playing some meaningful football down the stretch too. Arkansas, we talked about that beginning of the year. I didn't know if six was going to be enough. It turns out seven was, and Sam gets the automatic contract extension. Vanderbilt 7-6. I don't think Clark Lee was really on the hot seat because I don't think Vanderbilt cares that much about football. But hey, what a great year for them. And I'm sure they're thinking, hey, you know, we don't have to think about making a coaching change for a couple years. And certainly you don't want it to fire an alum. And then from here, this is what we start thinking about next year. We start thinking about the hot seat. Everybody above that, everybody we discussed is I think is good. Because I think Florida, with DJ Lagway and the way that they can recruit, I think they're probably going to be okay next year. Are they going to contend for the playoff? I don't think so. But again, at this point, it's difficult to really project that kind of stuff. We don't know what everybody's roster is going to look like. We're still kind of sorting through the portal stuff. But I think Hugh Freeze goes into next year on the hot seat. I don't think there's any question. And I'm sure that you all agree. You know, 5-7 is the record, and everybody in the league, with rare exception, wanted Hugh Freeze to come coach their team. Every time somebody had an opening, that was the talk, right? That was it. You got to get Freeze back, and it's not been good. It hasn't been. And, of course, they had a great recruiting class this year, and they're knee-deep in the portal as well. And so we'll kind of see, you know, what happens here. It's interesting, too. State brought in Sam Houston, edge Chris Murray earlier, and then State basically moved on, didn't push for a commitment. He's going to visit Auburn this week. That'll be interesting. I don't think he's big enough in this league. That's just my opinion. Former TCU signee. But, again, kind of looking at this Auburn scenario, I think my friend John Cohen maybe has an interesting decision to make. And for those of you that know John well, you understand, John is a guy that is a critical thinker, but he also is a guy, too, that kind of always feels like, hey, the ball coaches will figure it out. And Hugh Freeze obviously has won a lot of big games here in his career. But when you start thinking about, you know, what are these people willing to accept, you know, what are they looking, you know, they're not going to be happy. Are they thrilled about, you know, hey, Alabama didn't have a great year this year, and maybe they're coming back to the pack, and maybe you've got an opportunity next year to win the Iron Bowl? That's not going to be enough, though. Not going to be enough. And so I think that's the thing when you look at the Hugh Freeze era. In 2 years at Auburn, he's 11-14. That's not great, you know. And you may remember that in 2015, Freeze won 10 games. That was the apex of his existence. And Oxford, of course, they win the Sugar Bowl that year. And then your good friend and host got a hold of some phone records shortly thereafter, and then things changed. But but back-to-back losing seasons for the Tigers. There will not be a third. And Hugh Freeze remained the head coach at Auburn. So I think it's pretty safe to say Freeze enters next year on the hot seat. And I think the quality of this portal will determine how things go. And I don't know that 6-6 is enough next year. 7-5. Maybe you see it differently. But I'm eager to kind of see. And let's take a quick look at that, too. Let's take a quick look at that schedule. Because I don't know who they pick up in the non-conference. It's always interesting to me. You know, it's like, especially with the Power 5 mandate. You know, we're still having to deal with that. As well we should. I think that those unique matchups are important. I wish we didn't have to go as far out west. I'm glad we don't have to do that for a while. But Auburn opens up next year at Baylor. That could be spicy. You got to go to Waco in week one, you know, against a bowl team. Got some interesting pieces back. Sully Robertson. All right, you're at home against Ball State. That should be a dub. And then you're home against South Alabama. That should be a dub. And, yeah, I know they won a bowl game this year, but come on, you know. Then you got to go to Norman, Oklahoma. Could be interesting. Then you got to go to A&M. Interesting. And then you got Georgia. That's an interesting stretch that may define the Auburn season. You open up SEC play with a road trip to Oklahoma, and then back-to-back trips. And there's no open date there, right? The open date comes after that road trip to A&M, and then you get Georgia. And Georgia's going to be Georgia. And the Georgia-Auburn series is great. And then you got Missouri coming in. You got to travel to Arkansas, which is, even in an average year, it's tough to go to Fable and play. Then Auburn gets Kentucky, should be okay. Then you're at Vanderbilt. Is that a sure thing these days? No. Then you get Mercer and then the Iron Bowl. I mean, you know, this is not a schedule you look at and say, hey, this is a peach of a schedule that will enable us to kind of stack wins. I think you could look up at the middle of the season, and they're 3-3. Honest to goodness. And maybe 2-4 at the halfway point. Because, again, that trip to Baylor is not going to be a gimme. I think you give them Ball State and you give them South Alabama, but you got to go to Norman. And, again, I don't know what that team's going to look like next year, but I think they're going to probably be on par with Auburn or close to it. And that'll be the return of Jackson Arnold, too. Could be an emotional game, but it's interesting to think about that aspect of it. And again, let's speak of Oklahoma. Now let's take a quick look at those guys. And again, there were so many people that wanted Venables. I mean, for years and years and years, he was kind of like the Jimbo Fisher thing. Who's going to get Brent Venables? Who's going to get him? Who's going to get him? Well, Oklahoma gets him. And hey, good on him, right, for kind of holding out there. they ended up making the bowl game this year, but wasn't a great year by any standards. Of course, you get the big win over Alabama that I think he was coming back anyway, but at least it gave your administration a chance to breathe a little bit. They didn't have to start going out there soliciting donations to write big checks. You know, I think that's an important aspect of all of this stuff. But look at 2025 for them. You open up at Illinois State, and then you host Michigan. You host Michigan. And again, I don't know what shape the Wolverines are going to be in, but they didn't do themselves any favors with that. Of course, Michigan just beat Alabama. You know, Oklahoma fans said, well, so did we. But the reality of it is that's not – and walking apart. And you got to go to Temple. You ought to win that game. Of course, we mentioned the Auburn game. Then Kent State. All right, so again, I think you look up here and, you know, five games in, you're probably, what, 3-2, maybe 4-1 if you could beat Auburn. All right, then you're losing to Texas. Then you got to go to South Carolina. Williams-Brice, a tough place to play. You host Ole Miss. Who knows what that Ole Miss team's going to look like? You got to go to Tennessee. That's probably lost. Got to go to Tuscaloosa. That's probably lost. You host Missouri. You host LSU. I think if you're Brent Venables, next year you're just kind of looking at more of the same. You look at the Kentucky team. You know, this Kentucky team, I think Mark Stoops is clearly on the hot seat next year because there's so many people up there that don't want him there. You know, he signed an MOU to go to A&M. And then, of course, they renege on the deal because the Board of Regents was so incredibly disappointed that they would go get Mark Stoops. I think Stoops may have been okay there. But it's tough to go back home, right, when you've been out there flirting with somebody else and, you know, hey, you're going to leave your wife and move in with your girlfriend, and then all of a sudden the lease gets rejected and you got to go home to kind of patch things up. I know that's a bit of an exaggeration, a little bit hyperbolic there, but the reality of it is there are a lot of people in Lexington, Kentucky, that do not want Mark Stoops because they don't believe he wants to be there. And I think there's something to be said for that. And again, you go 4-8 this year, and there's a lot of people that just have not been supportive of this administration and this coaching staff. You know, Mitch, those guys do a great job at Kentucky. They certainly do. But they got a mess on their hands here with football. They do. Of course, we're very grateful to Stoops and those guys for beating Ole Miss. You know, we're not going to go make donations to your collective or anything. But it's interesting. And so real quickly, we'll look at that 2025 schedule. They're going to open up with Toledo, the Rockets, senior-laden team last year. That should be a dub. Then Ole Miss has to go to Lexington. We'd love for that to be a dub, but, you know, no, we don't even know what either team's going to look like then. But then you get Eastern Michigan coming in. And so, yeah, you feel like you're 2-1 at the very least before you head to Carolina. And South Carolina, of course, has won some interesting games against Kentucky. Then you got to go to Georgia. Yeah, that's tough. You get the open date. Then you get Texas at your place. Then you get Tennessee at your place. You go to Auburn. You get Florida at your place. You got Tennessee Tech, you're at Vandy, and you're at Louisville. And so you look at the schedule, and it looks like, you know, hey, Toledo, Eastern Michigan, Tennessee Tech, Louisville, ain't rivalry games, you throw those out. But you got to feel like you can win those three. But then you look at these SEC games, would you pick Kentucky over any of those teams? I would say no, but what's interesting is so many of the tougher games are going to be in Lexington. Ole Miss, we expect them to be good. I don't think they'll be as good as they were this year. We expect them to be good, but you get that in Lexington. Texas in Lexington. Tennessee in Lexington. Florida in Lexington. You know, so you would think, yeah, you could find a way to get six. But having to go to Vanderbilt, maybe not be what it has been. And again, I've said for years that Mark Stoops got fat on the fact that he got to play in the SEC East when so many of the teams in the bottom half of that league were down. So that's how I see it. We wrap up the year and kind of look at next year and kind of forecast kind of what's next. So we'll do top 10 lists, and I'm going to give you some hot takes for the rest of the year. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. We saw a testimonial just last night. Chad Gomillion, Boneyard listener, said that Blair's service was unparalleled. Said, you know what? Convinced my wife we needed a mortgage guy, and Blair and his team were outstanding. Another happy Boneyard listener on his way to the closing table, if they haven't closed already. You can get to the closing table, too, more times than not, when you deal with Blair Chandler, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. 24 years of experience. Get Blair's expertise working for you. You'll be glad you did. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair Chandler is the name to know. He is one of us. He is a Bulldog through and through. But he does not discriminate. If you're an Ole Miss fan listening to the show, he will certainly take your business and do a great job for you and be your advocate with underwriting. Visit Blair's website today or text and call. It goes directly to him, not through a call center, not through a receptionist, directly to Blair Chandler, 601-500-2344. Close with Blair. Okay, time for my top 10 songs, rock songs of 2024. And I will be honest with you, and some will disagree, I didn't think it was an especially great year with new music. We're going to do modern rock bands today. I mean, of course, we had some new Motley this year. We had some new Skid Row toward the end of last year. And so that stuff's fun. But the new blood is what we're talking about today. A lot of familiar names on this list. But again, I want to give you my top 10 modern rock songs. One of the things that I will tell you, too, there's so many people nowadays using computers, and the talent level in music has changed, but I think the quality of the production is great. And I think you're going to see more and more of it because it's, you know, and rather than having to go book expensive studio time, you can record at home, and everybody can download Pro Tools to their computer these days and have a home studio. But here we go. Top 10 rock songs, according to me, and I'm a Sirius XM Octane listener, so if you're looking for the new blood, you can find it there. Number 10, our friends from Memphis. It's Sleep Theory. You guys know that I named When the Bottom Falls after their song Another Way, their debut single a couple years ago. They dropped a really cool and catchy song this year called Stuck in My Head. And a friend of mine got a copy of the book to Daniel in Sleep Theory, and they couldn't believe it, that I was so inspired to name a book after a line in their song. But I think this is a band with some staying power. Everything they've released, I've been very pleased with. Again, Sleep Theory, Stuck in My Head, number 10. A band that I absolutely love, and I have loved from the very beginning. I remember the very first time that I had heard Beartooth. And it was the song In Between. I played it for Ani and my wife, and we all dug it. Had a chance to see them at Rocklahoma a few years back. Thanks, Mark. And I love this track, and I love what it means. The lyrical content is incredible. It's a track called I Was Alive. I didn't just live, I was alive. And that's kind of how I choose to live my life. I'm not here just to pay bills and raise kids and make everybody else rich. I'm trying to get out and have as much fun as I can, accomplish as much as I can, help as many people as I can. And I want to set a good example for my children that they look back one day and say, you know what? Our dad did some incredible things. That song is in that same vein. Number 8, a band that's not from Memphis, but they reference Memphis. And I love this band. I do. If you're looking for a new modern rock band that's got some real talent, let me encourage you to check out Memphis May Fire. Great track from them this year called Chaotic. I love it. Again, it's kind of got that industrial process sound, but they're a band that's very, very consistent. All right, number 7, one of the big bands from across the pond, it's Bring Me the Horizon. And they are releasing so much new material. Like every time you turn around, they're releasing a new single, and then eventually they'll get 6 or 7, and they'll make it an album, and they'll drop like 4 or 5 more additional tracks. But Bring Me the Horizon, we're going to go with the top 10 statues that cried blood. That's the name of the title of the single. But again, it's basically, it's about a relationship. I think you'll dig it. Now, a band that has really created some buzz this year. And this is a song that I think SiriusXM Octane's Big Ends Year End Countdown had a little bit higher than I did. But it's a song called Magnetic from Wage War. And again, it's about a relationship, too. It's like you and I will always be magnetic. And you've got those people in your life, right, that sometimes you just can't let go of, even though you probably should. And that's what that track's about. So it could be a positive and a negative. And we all have those toxic relationships. And you always kind of convince yourself you see the best in those people. And like, well, maybe they've changed. Maybe they'll stop this negative behavior. More times than not, they don't. Leopards rarely ever change their spots. And I know it's so interesting. You know, as people say, well, I've learned my lesson. And apparently they haven't, because they got to go out and do more research. But that's kind of what that track is about. Magnetic from Wage War. Number five, a band that I have been so incredibly happy to see so many of you embrace. I've had a chance to meet Lizzie Hale. Super, super cool. Incredibly talented. And they just keep finding new material. That's one of the things about bands that have staying power, is they continue to write great songs. So many people have a great debut album and then kind of have a sophomore slump. And next thing you know, they go from playing arenas and they're back in the clubs and eventually get dropped from the record deal. But Hailstorm has proven to be a band over the last decade or so that has been a headliner in many respects. And I still believe Lizzie Hale is the best rock female vocalist of this generation. A great track that they actually collaborated with the band I Prevail, who we love. Can You See Me in the Dark? Love that track. I think you'll dig it too if you don't already. Now, most of the final four, I think you know. I know you know the bands. Number four is Papa Roach. And this song was around basically the entire year and got new life when they collaborated with Carrie Underwood. And saw an interview just last night, Jacoby Shaddix and P. Roach, saying that they asked, hey, why was she the right pick? And he goes, well, I saw her live. And he goes, there's only so many ways that you can replicate things live, and that he felt that she was better live than she was in the studio. There's so many studio gangsters out there, right, that you know, they're just kind of a product of the processed sound. But Carrie Underwood, of course, America's sweetheart, jumps in and sings this duet, Leave a Light On for You. And again, it's a song about helping other people. And absolutely love this track. I love the duet version probably even more than the original. Number three, one of my favorite bands of the last 10, 15 years. And this is a band that many people thought was going to go away. And they made some lineup changes. Some people are like, there's no way they're going to be able to recapture the magic of the earlier catalog. I think they're better today than they ever have been. It's From Ashes to News, Barely Breathing. And when that song first dropped, we did a top 10 list of them. I think we revised it. And I told you guys, I thought it was the best new track from them over the last couple of albums. And absolutely love that track. Again, Barely Breathing from Ashes to New, my number three song of the year. Now, there's going to be some controversy, I think, with the top two. Even though people will probably agree these maybe were the top two songs of the year, you may disagree with the order. Now, I have been a Nothing More fan since the beginning. When I first discovered those guys, of course, they're, you know, based out of Baton Rouge in San Antonio, and they get together, and Johnny, of course, an incredible singer, an incredible songwriter. And when this new album dropped, I loved it. We even did a, you know, a top 10 of the album where I ranked the top 10 songs on the album. And the one to me that has stuck with me, even though I love House on Sand, I absolutely love it. And I love all the little interludes on the album. There's so much about that that is so great. But if it doesn't hurt, it doesn't mean a thing. If it doesn't hurt, it didn't mean anything. And again, that's so much about relationships and about loss and things like that. And it's the old adage, you know, I'd rather to have lost in love than never have loved at all. But the reality of that is that there's so many things in life that are going to come and go that are temporary in our lives. And there are some people that are tourists in our lives. And then, you know, I've had some people too in my life that I wish would have stayed around longer. And I'm sure there's some people that feel that way about me. And there's some others out there that I was ready to go. And I'm sure there are people that feel that way about me. But if it didn't hurt and it didn't mean anything, and I think there is some lyrical content in that that is very relatable to everybody. But number one for me, and this was kind of an easy one for me, and many of you may disagree, and it's okay, but it's the return of Linkin Park. and it's the Emptiness Machine. I could have gone Heavy as the Crown. I love that track too. But it was something about that moment when I listened to the Emptiness Machine from the first time, and I said, you know what, I'm so glad Linkin Park is back. And there are so many people out there that are very divided about this and say it's disrespectful to Chester's legacy. And I will revisit that topic again, as we did when that album dropped. We ranked those 10 songs too. The Emptiness Machine, I think, in many respects, turns Linkin Park onto a new generation of fans that will find the majesty and messaging of Chester Bennington that may not have had it before. I think there are some people that would get into this band and say, dude, I always heard about Linkin Park. Now we have a Linkin Park of our own. And for those of us that are old heads, we look at this and say, hey, we're happy that these songs are being played again. We're happy that there is new music. They're not just a nostalgic band anymore. And I'm really happy for Mike Shinoda and the guys. And again, there's so many people that have so many hot takes about Emily and the direction of the band. I think she has answered every call and done an amazing job. And so no matter how you feel about this new version of Linkin Park, I think they're here to stay. And I think it's great for the people of today, the young people of today, to have a chance to go back and listen to music that's, you know, 20 years old in many respects, and be turned on to one of the great performers of our lifetime, Chester Bennington. So that's my number one rock song of the year, The Emptiness Machine, because I just wanted to be part of something, right? And so did you. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy on X at Dogmatic67. That's DAWGMATIC67. You can find our great list on Spotify, that same handle. Just subscribe. Just hit the subscribe button, and then our new list will show up. And I've had so many people that have said, Steve, I love the fact that you guys put these things on Spotify, because when I travel and I'm trying to find new music or remember old favorites, you guys always give me some great content to choose from. And again, thanks to Roy, as always, for putting these lists together, making them available to you on his Spotify channel. So again, hit us up, let us know. We may just use your idea. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. We love the fact that we can go in there and find exactly what we need for our fan cave, our wardrobe. We need that great gift idea for the Bulldog fans in our life. And let's be honest about it. Some of you, while you won't admit it publicly, some of you are disappointed with your Christmas haul. It's okay to admit that privately, but don't go put it on Facebook. Don't do that. But yeah, maybe you didn't get exactly what you wanted. And you can take matters into your own hands and go shop at Campus Bookmart. Now, if you can't make it to town and you want to make sure you get true maroon, Miss Kathy Brown and the staff there at Campus Bookmart, they know what maroon looks like. They'll take care of you. Visit them World Wide Web, campusbookmart.net, and by being a loyal bonder, your listener will give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, Mississippi State women dropped the game last night to Kentucky. We were worried about this one. I think we can admit that, and we've discussed that. You know, it's so incredible to go back in hindsight and say, you know what, we had to go up there and play a team in their own environment that has been at sometimes kind of a house of horrors for us. It's true, and it's okay to admit that, but was not great. Was not great. And it kind of felt that way from the beginning. You know, it just kind of felt like, you know what, we're just not going to be where we want to be. And State drops the game 91-69. Kentucky ranked 16th in the country, and it's no surprise, right? The Wildcats shoot almost 55% from beyond the arc. Yeah, it's tough. And it's a 14-point lead for them at the break. We kind of hung in there in that third quarter and kind of made it a game, but we just never could get over the hump there. Jaquelo Jordan led the Bulldogs with 17 points. Anaya Russell and Quinera Montague with 13 points as well. And, you know, we need both of them to be great, but defensively we struggled. We just really, really struggled to get stops. And the sledding doesn't get any easier, as we're going to be hosting South Carolina this weekend. And I shared that earlier in the week that, you know, we didn't get any favors on the women's side when it came to SEC scheduling early on. And, you know, my honest opinion about this team, I think we're going to be a bubble NCAA tournament team. And again, the non-conference schedule, not especially challenging, but I think we handled it the way we should have. But, you know, when you drop, you know, your SEC opener, man, by 22 points against a team that's expected to finish in top half of the league, that's a warning for you. And then you got to turn around on Sunday and play arguably the best team in women's basketball over the course of the last decade. I think you would argue that Dawn Staley's program, when you stack it up, has been as good as anybody in the country over the last 10 years. And then you got to go to Oklahoma. And so, excuse me, Oklahoma comes here. But I think you're staring 0-3 in the league right in the face. And then we'll see what happens at Georgia. Then you got to go to Tennessee. But again, that it's a tough stretch to open. Those first five games are going to be tough. If you can get out of that thing 2-3, I think you've done really well. But I think 1-4 is probably more probable. But it could be a scenario you look up and you're 0-5. Need to be prepared for that. And I think Sam Purcell and his staff do a good job, but I don't think we did get any favors. You got Ole Miss coming in here, then Auburn coming in here. The schedule kind of lightens up a little bit until we play LSU. But there are no weeks off in SEC play. And again, you kind of look at what's left kind of down the stretch. You said, well, Steve, we're just getting into SEC play. I'm just kind of forecasting what I think. I think we could be a team that ends up, you know, maybe being a game or two under 500 in SEC play. And, you know, we'll see how things go. But, you know, you remember last year, we kind of battled and put ourselves in a situation that we could finish, you know, number two, number three in the league, and then had that great losing streak until we beat Missouri late. And it felt more like relief than it did victory when we finally won. But I think this year the health of the league is not helpful to us. I think that's important to understand. And so I believe, and again, that's maybe it's not much of a hot take, but I think we're going to be a bubble team and we may not make the tournament. It's going to depend on how the net kind of works out. A lot of basketball left to be played. I'm not going to sit here and discourage you from coming to these games. But don't be surprised if you look up here in a couple weeks and we haven't won a game in the SEC, because that's just kind of how the way the schedule is. But, again, it kind of eases up a little bit as we get into late January. And we got to make hay there. You know, we've got to find a way to need to beat Ole Miss at our place and Auburn and then go to Missouri. And that's easier said than done at times, but we've got to find a way to get that taken care of. Those are three wins that we need. And that's you got to start counting wins. You know, you start looking at the schedule, you start thinking about what is to come and how there are so many ranked teams within our league. And we'll all beat each other up a little bit. That's one of the most important things for us. We got to keep Jerkayla Jordan healthy because she can be a difference maker for us because she can create her own shots. All right, let's look ahead to the Mississippi State men's basketball game. I know many of you are excited about that. We really need to get out and support this team. And I say that because I think there are so many people that that do a great job with that. And we have some fence-sitting fans. And I'm not being judgmental. I mean, you guys kind of see it for yourself. There's a lot of times that we just kind of wait for the big ball game. Well, we've already won one of those. That was that road game at Memphis. And again, I think that was maybe an eye-opening game for so many people. And then you turn around and you kind of play down to the competition against Bethune-Cookman. But again, I think, you know, the layoff probably hurt us. We didn't play a game for 9 days. And, you know, you took care of business. You know, maybe you didn't play as well as you should have, but you took care of business. And then South Carolina, of course, comes in here. You know, we have played some really good games against South Carolina in recent years. I kind of see them in many respects, you know, on our level. You know, I think they're a team that we kind of see as a contemporary. And you got to beat your contemporaries if you want to get ahead in this league. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of life. But this South Carolina team, 10-3 overall, but they have won 7 in a row. Let's kind of take a quick look here. You know, they blow through the exhibition here, but they open up at home and they lose to North Florida. 74-71. I don't know if you're big Osprey fans, but big wins for them in Colonial Life Arena. And so you want to talk about taking the air out of the balloon? There you go. You get South Carolina State. That's an opponent in common. They beat them 86-64. They get Towson State 80-54. They go to Indiana. They get beat by 16. And this is a good Indiana team. Not great, but a good one. But you're never going to look at losing at Indiana and say, well, that's a game you expected to win. It's just not the reality of life. They get Mercer by a dozen. You probably would like a bigger margin there. And then they go and take on Xavier on a neutral. In the Fort Myers tip-off game, they lose by 9 to Xavier. And they bounce back to beat Virginia Tech 70-60. And you'll notice a lot of these games, like against teams that should have comparable talent, are very competitive. Boils down to coaching. They go to Boston College and win that game 73-51 in the SEC-ACC Challenge. And again, you go into a Power 5 opponent, and you beat them in their gym, it's always going to be a significant deal, especially when you win by 20-plus. Then, of course, they kind of get hot here, right? You beat Boston College. You beat East Carolina. You beat USC Upstate. You expect to win those games. And then you get Clemson, who was ranked 25 at the time. You get them in overtime at your place, 91-88. That is a confidence-building win in every aspect because, number one, it's your rival, but also, two, it's a ranked team. You get Radford at your place. It's another blowout. Presbyterian comes in. You get them by 10. So now you get in the arena in the Humphrey Coliseum, and you play Mississippi State, who is the second highest team they played this year. So, you know, it's been a non-conference schedule that has, you know, had some moments. You know, I mean, you know, Xavier, obviously a very solid mid-major program. And, again, they were ranked, but you start running through this. I mean, they've already played, you know, I guess Mississippi State will be the fourth-ranked team they played. You know, and so, you know, we'll take it out. We'll check it out and see what happens. But that's going to be a 1 p.m. tip on Saturday. And we certainly hope that you'll turn out and come support the Bulldogs because, you know, get up, come spend some time up here, do some shopping. And you know, eat some local cuisine, and then go to the ball game, and then you can get home at a decent hour. You know, some important pro football games going on this weekend too. But you know, kind of looking at South Carolina here, you know, it's always interesting to me to kind of see, you know, how things break down. You know, for them, they have been a second half team. Now, they've outscored their opponents in the first half. But the difference is about 100. It's 90-point differential in the second half over the first half. Now, their opponents have also been better in the second half, but they're outpacing them throughout the year. So that's something to kind of monitor. We've been a really good second half team too. You know, a lot of times you look up and say, okay, we're up 5 or 6 at the break. We'll find a way to lock things down once Coach Jans and the crew make some adjustments, and we have. Colin Murray Bowles kind of is the straw that stirs the drink up there. This is a guy that, you know, does a little bit of everything, you know, for them. Leads them in shot attempts and shots made, averaging 16.6 points a game. Jamari Thomas has been very good for them as well. They've had four guys that have started all 13 games. Jacoby Wright has started 12 of 13. But Thomas, 12.6, and it feels like Nick Pringle has been there forever and a day. 10.6 points per game for him. And there's kind of an appreciable drop-off once you get through Wright and Zachary Davis, who is a guy that's played in all 13 games and did pick up the one start when Wright did not start. But from a three-point shooting percentage, you know, right at 35%, and it's pretty spread throughout the team. So it's a product of the offensive system. It's not just one guy that has been especially skilled at knocking this thing down. Jamari Thomas, 21 of 54 for right at 39%. Jacoby Wright, 18 of 47 at 38%. Morris Ugasuk, 43% for him. Miles Stoot, 20 of 59, 35% for him. So we're going to have to get out and defend the perimeter. And, of course, that's going to mean that, hey, you know, we're going to have to be good rebounders too. You got to get out there and force those contested shots, and hopefully you get misses and you're able to get defensive rebounds. You know, Keyshawn Murphy's got to be big for us in this ball game. But we're playing this game at home, and I think that is rather significant too, and that's where you guys come in. This is a South Carolina team that has only played four games away from Colonial Life Arena, and they are 2-2 in those games, and 1-1 in actual road games. Of course, the lost to Indiana. You know, again, not going to beat anybody up for that. But this is a team that probably feels pretty good about itself. But a team that I think we're capable of beating. I expect State to win this ball game, and State certainly needs to win this ball game. They're a team defensively that maybe hadn't been as good as they have been historically. But 64 steals a game. Opponents have had 96. And so you can turn these guys over. And that's almost, you know, it's about, 30% differential, you know. Blocks are even this year, you know. And but they're going to come out shooting it, you know, from the locker room. 290 three-point attempts this year. Opponents have shot 232. But they have been decent perimeter defense. Opponents just shooting 31%. But you also think about that, too. Some of that is the quality of competition. Averaging 75.5 points a game, allowing 65. So a 10-point differential in scoring margin. And, again, that's what we went through. And so many of these games are competitive. You know, that's just kind of the reality of life. And even some of the non-con games they play that they should have blown out, they kind of allowed people to hang around. So you could be the difference in this ball game, and we certainly hope that you'll come out and support the Bulldogs every chance you get, no matter the sport. I do think this is a tournament team. That's not a hot take. I think many of you feel the same way. I think this Bulldog team, and again, it's dependent on matchups, I think we're not only going to win a conference, an NCAA tournament game, I think we're going to win two. That's how I feel. I think this team, again, we still got the balance of the season left to go. But I think when you look at the pieces and the chemistry that we've already developed, I think this team, and I think, again, that road win at Memphis is kind of one of those things that kind of gets you excited and begin to think about what could be. And, again, we got to see the bracket, and we really don't want to be the 8-9, right? You don't want that. You know, and I think we're a team that's going to finish in the top half of this league. And maybe I'm being a bit of a homer here, but I really believe that Mississippi State has a pretty special basketball team. Again, I'd love to have the dominant post guy. We don't. But I think Chris Jans, of course, is skilled enough to kind of use the personnel that he has to scheme everybody up. And, again, for the first time, and I mentioned this on the show before, and we talked about it on Bo Bound Show yesterday, for the first time, I think, in the Chris Jans era, we didn't get absolutely cornholed with the opening of the SEC schedule. You get South Carolina, and then you go to Vanderbilt. Those are two winnable games. And then you get Kentucky coming in here, and I think that's a Kentucky team that could be had. And so I won't be the least bit surprised if we're 3-0 in the league going to Auburn. Now, of course, beating Kentucky is easier said than done, and we've had some really good Mississippi State teams that have lost, and at times with some help from the officials, lost to some Kentucky team. We've had some great teams lose to Kentucky, and we've had some pretty good teams lose to some pretty average Kentucky teams under Calipari. But how many times have we had those guys on the ropes and just couldn't finish in Humphrey Coliseum? And I know many of you are already making plans. It's already a tough ticket. So if you're looking for tickets, you need to make a move now, because some friends of mine are looking for tickets and they're saying, hey, it looks like that's going to be a tough thing to get. But this Kentucky team, you know, they're 11-2. 9-0 in their own arena, and then 2-2 away, but only played one true road game. And we'll talk about that as we get a little bit closer to the game. But you know, they're a team that gets out and runs a little bit. And, of course, you know, they beat Duke. And anytime those Blue Bloods get together, it really doesn't matter the quality of the season. Kentucky wants to beat Duke. They want to beat North Carolina. They want to beat Indiana. But this Kentucky team lost at Clemson. the same Clemson team that South Carolina beat in overtime. They edged out Gonzaga in Seattle. And if you follow college basketball, you get it. You know, it's tough to go up there to the dog pound and play. They called it the Climate Pledge Arena. But to go play the Zags in their gym and win, you know, Kentucky fans probably expected that. But that's big. And then you get Louisville. You know, that's a rivalry game. You win that one by 8. And then you lose at Madison Square Garden to Ohio State. That's an Ohio State team, of course, that got absolutely spanked by Auburn. So you begin to think about kind of what lays ahead for them. They're going to open up tomorrow against Florida. That's going to be an early tip, so you can watch that game. If you're not making your way to Starkville, you can watch that game ahead of ours. And then they go to Georgia. And you got to feel like Kentucky, again, should be 2-0 when they come here. So that's going to be a big ball game. And, again, you could make the difference in the game. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. That's been my home away from home this week. We had a great time at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I love the fact, too, just having everybody under one roof. My mom and my stepdad were able to come. Ani and his family came. Audrey flew in from Florida. Mia was there. Ian was there. So we had all of the family under one roof. You know, and that's so important, too, especially my mom is getting older. You know, and I had to help her up the hill. You know, we went down to the fire pit and things like that. And your good friend and host was able to get a fire going even without any accelerants, even though there was some moisture in the air. That's that old Cub Scout training coming out of me. But nevertheless, you know, I began to kind of think about that as my mom held her great-grandchildren. You know, you think about your own great-grandmother and how long you had the opportunity to have them in your life, and you kind of recognize, you know, the reality of the situation. And I took a picture with my mom holding her granddaughters, and I thought to myself, her great-granddaughters, and I said, you know, I don't know how many other chances I'm going to have to do this. And so I'm so glad that we took the time and reached out to the folks at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse and said, hey, we want to do something during the holidays pretty special for our family. And everybody walked away, and everybody's like, hey, Daddy, thanks so much for doing this. Even my Starkville kids, even though they have apartments here in town, they stayed with us. And, of course, we were up into the wee hours of the morning playing board games and, you know, all kind of stuff. There's pop-off, I think, some game that we play that, you know, you shoot these balls in the air and all kind of stuff like that. And you got to catch them. It's teamwork. But it's really just about being together no matter what you play. You know, we even sat around and watched Footloose. My daughter-in-law comes from a very conservative family from Harrison, Arkansas. She had never seen Footloose. And Footloose could almost have been, you know, set in her town, you know. But nevertheless, it was just great being together. You should plan some time to be with those you love the most and rent out the Stark Vegas Clubhouse for yourself. You should. Whether it's a ball game weekend or maybe you got some vacation time saved up that you need to take. You know, take a midweek trip up there. And, you know, you love going to Starkville, too, when it's not a game day deal, right? You may want to come up there and do the doubleheader, take in the men and the women one day, but sometimes you just want to be in Starkville and eat in all your favorite places, shop in all your favorite places, and not have a lot of lines and things like that. Well, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse can accommodate you. And now six bedrooms, two baths, about to be three baths. We'll do that later this year. So they're always looking to expand. But, guys, it's out past the Highlands, right? That's farther back from the Highlands, if you know that area off 182. So it's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, full-service kitchen. So incredible, man. And got the wet bar. We didn't partake, but we did use the fire pit area and that back porch area. Played a little cornhole out there. Had a great time. But now that we've stayed out there, it's one thing to go out there and just kind of tour the facility and check it out, but to go stay, and it's so great. You know, and Dana remarked after that first night, she said, I slept so good out here. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, staying somewhere else and not having to take care of a lot. You know what I mean? Just the relief of that. And so schedule a special trip for you and your family at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The Facebook page will come up. And I don't think the pictures on the Facebook page do it justice. I really don't. I think you need to kind of, you know, schedule it yourself. Go check it out. But after you Google that, you're going to have some booking options as well. You can book through Airbnb. You can book through VRBO. But if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you some money. Book through Evolve and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10. and get 10% off your stay. You'll be glad you did. Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I can personally attest to the quality of the experience you're going to have there. All right, we're going to go a little bit over today because we're a little bit short on Wednesday. But we mentioned baseball coming up. I think we're a team is capable of getting to Omaha. Am I ready to predict that? No, I'm not. But I do think I'm ready to predict that Mississippi State will host a regional, provided that we stay healthy. Provided that we stay healthy. And that's one thing about having the depth that we have on his pitching staff now is you don't have to really push these guys, you know, because I think the bullpen is going to be stacked. Probably the most depth we've had in the bullpen since 2021 when we won it all. But I like the look of this team, and I think we're going to be much better offensively. That was a big thing last year. We said, hey, if the pitching can be good, the offense will carry us the rest of the way. Well, that didn't work out for us. And matter of fact, again, Justin Parker, an amazing job last year turning that pitching staff around. I think it's interesting. I think he has more pieces to work with this year. Yeah, and that's the thing that I think about last year. You know, we knew what we had in Nate Dom, provided he could stay healthy. We love Nate. We do. We love Nate. And can only begin to imagine what last year would look like if Nate had been able to stay healthy, you know. Cal Steven, of course, was a guy that was kind of an above-average starter at Purdue. He ends up being an All-American at Mississippi State. Step up in competition meant a step up in his competitiveness, and also great job by Justin Parker after kind of a couple of so-so appearances early in the year, and people were like, you know what, we need to take him out of the rotation, Steve. He ends up being our ace when it's all said and done. It's nuts how life works. Tyson Harden, of course, a guy that many of you wanted to transfer, ends up getting drafted and signs a pro contract. And so I think there's more pieces to work with because you begin to think about that. You know, Mekhi Grant, he's a guy we don't really talk about. We talk about the portal guys. You don't think about Mekhi Grant coming back. Dane Burns, that's a guy that's going to be a dude too. So there's some depth there. And as I mentioned Lemonis, you know, a few weeks ago, I was like, Chris, if nothing else, I think you've got enough pitching now that you can just kind of have a regular Tuesday guy. Instead of this Johnny Holstaff thing, and you know, there's going to be times that you're going to have to do that to get guys some work. But I think as we get deeper into the season, when you get into SEC play, you can just have a couple of arms that are allocated for Tuesday. I mean, you think about that scenario we played Florida last year. We go play Samford, and we end up having to use some of our high-profile relief arms like Tyler Davis to win that ball game, and then we go to Florida and we're just not fresh and we couldn't close out those games. And so that's important to understand too. I think there's more depth in this bullpen. And so I'm going to pick State to host and win a regional, and then we'll see how the matchups go in the Supers. You know, where does that end up being? Is State a top eight national seed? I don't know that I'm ready to say that yet because we don't have enough information. Is State capable of getting to Omaha this year? Yes, I believe we are. And I think we have a peach of a schedule. I think it's so important, too. The fact that, you know, when you look at who we're avoiding at college baseball, you know, and to get Texas in here, it's nuts to think about that. And if you've read the dude, and so many of you have, and thank you so much for that, I worked exceptionally hard on that. So this will be the first time that the Texas Longhorns have played in Starkville since 1922. Were you aware of that? I suspect you weren't. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. There have only been, a handful of regular season meetings between Mississippi State and Texas. We played them in 22 in Starkville. And in 1925, Duty took the show on the road. Because there were so many people that said, hey, Mississippi State is a great Southern team. And Texas, in the 1924 season, I think, if my memory serves me correct, they went 24-2. They were outstanding. There weren't polls back then, but Texas was considered by many to be the best team in college baseball. And so Duty puts together this trip to Texas. So we go to Baylor and we split a couple games, and we should have won those both games. We went to Texas and we destroyed Texas. We won both games there, 8-4 and 12-8. And then on the way out, we went and beat SMU. And it really validated Mississippi State as a national caliber program. We weren't just a good Southern team. We went into Texas and beat the Longhorns, who were considered the cream of the crop in college baseball. And so this will be the first regular season matchup in 100 years. Yeah, let that sink in for a second, right? That's a cool thing. And I think it's great. Texas coming in gets to come to Duty Noble Field, really for the first time ever. You know, again, so 100 years, everything else has been either in Omaha or in Arlington. Because we played Arlington. That was a regular season matchup in a non-con game in 2021. We played Texas. That was the Landon Sims coming out party. But as far as, like, you know, on campus, this will be the first time in 100 years. So that's a cool thing there. But, yeah, I like the schedule. Again, you know, you got Texas right out of the gate, but you know what? Texas gets Mississippi State right out of the gate, too. We go to Oklahoma. I like that trip, you know. And then we got to go to LSU. We've won, what, three of the last four series down there. But it's always LSU. I like getting them in March before the wind patterns change. And those of you that know much about college baseball and about weather in the South, the wind in March typically blows in at Alex Box Stadium. And then when the sun comes out and the temperatures warm up, it tends to blow out. So you like to get them early. And then we get South Carolina coming in here. You like that. You got to go to Alabama. You know, and I think they're going to be good, not great. You got Florida coming in here. I think Florida could be really, really good this year. You know, we'll see how the pitching comes around. It's always the case. And then we got to go to Auburn. Auburn expects to be improved. I just, you know, I don't know if they did enough in the portal. I'm sure they'll tell you they think they did. I don't know that, though. Kentucky comes in here. They lost an awful lot last year. But, you know, Minge is always the guy that's going to grind it out and put things together. Ole Miss comes to Starkville. And then we got to go to Missouri. And the wind always tends to blow out in late May in Mizzou. But I'm going to call Mississippi State. We're going to pick them to host a regional and win a regional and get to a super and have an opportunity to get to Omaha this year. On the softball side of things, I don't know a lot about what we got coming back, but I do think we'll certainly be back in the postseason again. But I can't speak intelligently about, you know, what the rest of the league has. I do think Nick Zimmerman's going to do a great job at Mississippi State. It'll be interesting to see, you know, with what we have coming back and what the rest of the league looks like. But I think it's pretty safe to say that we should be back in the postseason again. Do we compete for an SEC championship? I don't know that I'd go that far. We weren't projecting that last year. But I think getting Zimmy back is huge for Mississippi State. We talk a little bit about, you know, the football, you know, some of the teams, you know, that were kind of around us in the standings when it was all said and done. Here's what I expect from Mississippi State football. I think we're going to go down there and beat Southern Miss pretty well. Now, I know that it's going to be like a Super Bowl for them. Charles Huff, of course, former Bulldog assistant. And what a great get for Southern Miss to get Charles Huff, right? And I don't know about how things worked with him and Marshall when it's all said and done. I guess it kind of depends on who you want to believe. But I expect to go down there and win. I know there will be some moving pieces and some adjustments we have to make. I just don't think they're going to be able to match up with us athletically. And I really hope that you guys are able to get tickets without much trouble. You probably need to put that on your calendar and start planning ahead. So August 30th will be at Southern Miss. I can expect to win that game. Arizona State, I don't even know what they're going to look like next year. Right? I mean, Leavitt is back at quarterback, and he got much better as the year went on. Got a lot more comfortable throwing the football. He kind of ran against us. We knew that he was going to be a little bit challenged with the forward pass early in the year he was. Yeah, but Scatabo and some of those guys are kind of moving on. I don't know what to say, but it's a toss-up game. It's a toss-up game at home. And we should be much better against the run. But, you know, Kenny Dillingham did a great job this year. And so I can't call that one yet. But by the time it gets here, I think we'll all have talked ourselves into thinking we should win that game. Alcorn State comes in. That's a win. Northern Illinois, how ironic is that? That we're going to take two, probably three players from them and then host them this year. And that's a game, again, Northern Illinois, a veteran team. They lost a lot in the portal, but that's a game that we expect to win. We also expected to beat Toledo, but we're going to call that a win today. And so you look at this and say, hey, State opens up with four consecutive non-conference games. Got a puncher's chance to win all four, but let's say, you know, you get three. You get 3-1. You got Tennessee coming in here. That Tennessee roster is going to look a lot different. But Tennessee's still going to be probably better than us across the board. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what that team looks like, but that's not one I think that we can count. Going to A&M, we've had some success down there, but I'm curious to see what they look like. You know, of course, you know, Mario Craver's down there now. You know, Marcel Reed, of course, a guy that is a true dual threat guy. That really bothered us this year, you know. And so it's going to be on the backers. It's going to be on some beefier defensive linemen to kind of create a pocket and keep him in there, make him be a quarterback. But it's always tough going to Kyle Field. But, again, we've had some success there. You got to go to the Swamp. I'm looking forward to that. Get the open date before, you know, we go to Florida. That's always so important, too, when you start looking at that aspect of things. You know, it's like, where do things look on our schedule? And where do we fall on somebody else's schedule? You know, that's one of those things I think you look at, and you have to kind of calculate that. And it's one of the reasons I didn't pick us to beat A&M in the preseason, because of the fact we had to go to Texas and then Georgia. And I just thought we'd be pretty beat up after that. But, you know, Florida, it's so interesting to kind of see how this thing plays out. The 2 weeks before they play Mississippi State, they're going to host Texas. They're going to be at A&M. And then they host State and have the open date before Georgia. So I like where we fall on the schedule. I'd love for them to have that Georgia game right after us. But, you know, they always get the open date, you know, before the world's largest cocktail party. But I like where we fall on their schedule. I just think, you know, Lagway could be a guy that's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be tough for us, you know, to slow him down. Texas comes to Starkville. I think Texas, whether or not they win a NAFL championship this year, is still going to be a very good team next year. I'm counting that as a loss. We're going to go to Arkansas next year. Arkansas did us in this year. No question about that. But, again, what do they look like next year? What does the portal look like for them? I saw some people that are kind of forecasting them as one of the losers in the year. I think that's a little bit premature. One of the losers in the SEC in the portal. I mean, it's not over yet. And then we get Georgia again, and I don't know why we're having to play Georgia with so much regularity. I think we go decades and barely play them, and it's like, you know, all of a sudden the last 5 years we have to play them. And you got to go to Missouri. Going to Como is a tough place to play, but it's probably one we're going to have to get. Ole Miss comes to Starkville. I'm going to give you my hot take. We're winning the Egg Bowl next year. And so I think we'll find a way to get to six. I do. And again, I understand people like, oh, Steve, it's the most difficult schedule in the country. I think it is possible that you could win all four non-conference games. Of course, the Arizona State game is the one that gives me pause. But it gets you to three, and you start thinking about the toss-ups. And that's one of the things that's, you know, it's kind of a rough thing for State, is that some of these toss-ups are on the road, and toss-ups tend to favor the home team. So we're going to call it 6-6. I think Levy will find a way to get it done. I think we're going to be much better on defense. And that's, you know, even if we're just 50th in defense, you probably feel like you got a puncher's chance to get six, maybe seven wins. But it is a difficult schedule. It always is for Mississippi State. But that's how I feel about it. And listen, I appreciate you guys so much. It's a brand new year. And as I've shared with you guys on Wednesday, it's going to be what we make it. Okay, there's not going to be any, you know, mumbo jumbo or any, you know, any parable that we can, you know, recite or recant or anything like that. We can't go outside and do some rain dance and all of a sudden just call them prosperity. None of that's going to make any difference, right? Having a positive mental attitude is a great thing. But as the good book tells us, faith without works is dead. We got to go do our part. You know, it can't just be about work. Got to be about family too. But the reality of it is we have to have a vision. We have to do what we can. I'm a goal-setting guy, right? I'm one of those kinds of people that, like I tell my staff, you know, I want 300 pieces of content a month. And if that means I got to go out there and write 120 of them, that's what I got to do. But very, very goal-oriented, and I think you have to be too. I think if you never know where you're going, you won't know when you're on your way or when you're behind the pace. So have some goals for yourself, whether it be savings goals, whether it be educational goals, whatever. You need to have a plan to get things done, or next year you're going to be sitting in the same situation saying, you know, well, next year's my year. Hey, let's make this year your year. And then next year we'll make that year your year too. right? We don't have to just sit back and just say, well, you know, I think things are going to be better this year. Go make them better for yourself. One of my best friends years ago ended up starting the Molly Ringwalds, a guy named Benny Bruce. And he and Sparky Lane, Nicky Minnelli, those guys are great. And Benny told me something that I always remember this. He goes, the solutions to life's problems are often pretty simple. We just kind of complicate them with our emotions. Right? If you're unhappy with your job, go get another one. If you're unhappy in your relationship, end it. Right? You know, work to correct it. And if you feel like you can't, then end it. You know, but the reality of life is there's so much of this. Well, you say, well, Steve, it gets complicated. It does get complicated. Uncomplicate your life. Make good decisions for yourself and your family. And work hard this year. And this time next year, I think we'll be excited about where we are. If you hadn't done so, go to dirtynoblebook.com and you can order copies of The Dude. Of course, there are signed copies all over the great state of Mississippi. They're sold out at Reed's, and we're going to be delivering some books to them this weekend, so they'll have them. I appreciate your support of the book. And so many people picked that The Dude is one of the best books of 2024. Thank you so much for that. You can find that and all my sports titles at dirtynoblebook.com, along with When the Bottom Falls. And, you know, come out and enjoy a float at True West Floats by Starkville. It's been so cool, too, that so many people have got a chance to meet and know my wife. And they're like, dude, Steve, she's awesome. I know. That's why I married her. And thank you guys so much for being so kind to her and making her feel so welcome in the Mississippi State business community. So be thinking about that when you think about your baseball weekends. You know, be thinking ahead. Hey, I'm going to be up there all weekend. Be needing something to do. I want to go float. Yeah, be sure and do that. And, of course, come join us over at jeanspage.com. Let's get out of here. You guys have a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.